just occurred to me as I was sitting there that I probably did not get a correction in the bulletin. So if you saw Anthony in the bulletin, I'm not sure if that's what was there or not. But we did a little trade here. So I was blessed as we were listening to the study from Nahum. The thought of opening up ourselves before God, being willing to acknowledge a need. The song that we sang, the second song that we sang, the last verse, Spirit of power, Spirit of God, Spirit of burning, work through thy word. Search us and sift us. Spare not the dross. Show us that self-life ends at the cross. And that's so fitting with the devotional that we just heard. And this morning for a message, I want you to turn with me to Matthew 22. Matthew 22, we're going to be looking at verses 1 to 14. The message title this morning is A Wedding Invitation. And as I look at this passage here, it actually takes on, as you analyze it, it actually takes on an evangelistic thrust. We don't really think about that when we think about a wedding. But really, that's the message in this passage. And I may ask for an invitation hymn at the end. I just feel the Spirit leading. Matthew 22, verses 1 to 14. We're going to go ahead and read these verses. And Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables and said, The kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king, which made a marriage for his son, and sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again he sent forth other servants, saying, Tell them which are bidden, Behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. But they made light of it, and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants, and entreated them spitefully, and slew them. But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and he sent forth his armies, and destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. Then saith he to his servants, The wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways, and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. And when the king came in to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. And he said unto him, Friend, how camest thou in hither, not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, Bind him hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen. So I look at this passage this morning. The Spirit led my thoughts around the idea of God's invitation. God is putting an invitation out there to each of us. And it is so easy to squander that invitation. It's so easy, as evidenced by this passage. But when we come prepared, with hearts open to that invitation, there's blessing. Contrarywise, there's curse. There's judgment. There's punishment. First main point of the lesson, the message this morning, we're going to look at the occasion. What was the occasion? That's pretty simple. It was a royal marriage. It says a king prepared a marriage for his son. So this was a royal marriage. He had everything put together. I think his preparations were probably elaborate. We look at Jewish custom. They did not spare in their wedding celebration, in their preparation. Even if you weren't royal, the bride and groom were basically king and queen for the duration of the wedding. Ceremony, which many times lasted several days. And we'll understand more of that as we look more at this passage. Okay, the hosts. Second main point is the hosts. Who were the hosts? Matthew 9, 14 and 15. I'm going to read, because that actually, keep your finger in this other passage because we'll be back to it. Matthew 9, 14 and 15 gives a little clarity into the application that Jesus was making here. The host we had as a king, the groom was his son. There was attendees. It does not say a whole lot about who they are. But let's read Matthew 9, verses 14 and 15. The disciples of John came to Jesus with a question. This is the question. Why do we and the Pharisees fast oft, but thy disciples fast not? And Jesus said unto them, Can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then shall they fast. It's pretty clear from these verses that the bridegroom is Jesus. He says the children of the bride chamber cannot fast. They need to rejoice while the bridegroom is here. The bridegroom is Jesus. And in our account over here in Matthew 22, there is actually no mention of the bride. So I'm not going to go into that this morning. So if the bridegroom is Jesus, then the bridegroom's father, the host, is God. So we have here Jesus, and we have God. God the Father, putting on this marriage, the celebration of the marriage of his son. And then verses 14 and 15 here tell us, shed some light on who the attendees are. He says, the children of the bride chamber. Where does he say this here? He's referring to, the question that disciples of John brought to Jesus, why do your disciples not fast? So the children of the bride chamber are the disciples of Jesus. Who are the disciples of Jesus? I believe that's us who are endeavoring to follow Jesus this morning. So we have the bridegroom, Jesus, we have the host, God, with the attendees being the disciples of Christ and brought down to today, you and I. The attendees of this wedding are you and I. I also noted from Matthew 22 that these attendees are people that were formerly bidden by the king. You might say, their support of predestination. But as we read through this passage, it actually takes all the props away from that theory. The attendees were formerly bidden by the king. Okay, we're going to move on to the third main point, the invitation. And I find this in verses 4 and 8. He sent forth, now let me back up, verses 3 and 4 first. He sent forth servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding. So the invitation had already been issued. They were expecting a wedding. If I understand Jewish culture right, they didn't know exactly what day it was going to be. But now it's ready. And the servants are sent out to tell them that it's ready. Come now. It's all ready. And verse 4, he says, it's prepared. My oxen and my fatlings are killed. It was ready to be walked right into. There was a lot of preparation going into this. There was oxen butchered. There was beef cattle butchered. And I'm sure that was just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, that might have been the main course, but there was more. A lot of preparation went into it. And I see, as we bring this into today's parallel, there's an invitation for each one of us. Right now we're focusing on the children of the bride chamber. But the passage goes on. There's an invitation here. There's a lot of preparation went into it. The preparation started with Jesus on the cross. Preparation started there. But there's still preparation being made today for this wedding that we are being called to. You know, I believe we don't really see the culmination of this until the marriage supper of the Lamb in the future. There's an invitation already sent out. And I'm moving on to the next section of the guests, but we're still seeing more of the invitation. So we're looking at the guests. What happened to the guests? Everything was prepared for them. Custom had it that they had to come in with wedding garments on. And typically, a wealthy family would actually issue those wedding garments to the invited persons. And maybe some less wealthy families might have just asked you to wear something specific. But a wealthy family, this was a king. I believe the wedding garments were already given out. They were provided for those who were invited to the wedding. Now, what happened to the guests? The first round of guests, verse 3, just says they would not come. They would not come. And we have a little more light on why not in a little bit. But the king actually extended his invitation again. He sent other servants in verse 4. And he said, it's ready, come. Verse 5, this is the pre-invited guests again. They made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, one to his merchandise. They laughed at the invitation and said, I'm too busy with my business. Why now? It was supposed to be, I was expecting it to be a couple days from now. They went to their businesses, one to his farm, one to his merchandise. Their businesses meant more to them than this wedding invitation. How do you and I find it today? Do our businesses, the things that we need to do each day, legitimate things, but are they taking priority in our lives over God's invitation? God's invitation to sit in holy places and fellowship with Him. Okay, looking a little more at the reinvitation. The first invitation to the pre-invited, well, the first calling in to the wedding of the pre-invited was ignored. The second one, there was more of a reaction to. People scoffed at them. Some mistreated the servants or killed them. God's Spirit. I'm looking at these servants that were doing the inviting as the spirits of God. Just using that as a parallel. If we spurn the promptings of the Spirit, our actions are going to go downward. The Spirit, again, these servants invited a couple of times, and then they were done. Then the king said, other action has to be taken, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But it was going downward to the point of utter rejection of the king's messengers. Okay. My third subpoint under the guests, verses 8 to 10, we find a new group of guests being brought in. And to me it is interesting, it clarifies both bad and good. This invitation was put out ahead of time to many. It was spurned. It was extended again to whoever would accept it. I believe is what is happening here. It almost gives the impression of it uses the word bid. I was thinking more of compelling, but bid does not necessarily say compelling. The invitation was extended to, verse 10, as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. And so verse 10, they went and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. When we look at this thought of bad and good, I want us not to look around and say the people out in the city. Now, that one's bad, that one's good. I want us to look in our own hearts. What's there this morning? Is it good? Am I saying it's mostly good, which means I have some bad spots reserved there? What is the condition of your heart? It doesn't matter what the condition is when it comes to the invitation. It is for those with bad, those who are good. But our response to that invitation makes all the difference. The wedding was furnished with guests, both bad and good. The former ones didn't come. There was a different response. There was a response that said, here we are. Yes, we want to come to this wedding. It's prepared. We want to go. The fourth subpoint under the guests, verses 11 and 12, we found that one tried to go without meeting the conditions. He tried to come on his own terms. It says, when the king came in to see the guests, there was a man which had not on a wedding garment. The king was wroth. He was angry with that man for spoiling the wedding by coming in a fashion other than what he asked him to come. Again, I want us to look at our own hearts. Is my heart prepared before God? Is my heart opened up to God? Am I willing to accept God on His terms? Am I doing that? Or am I trying to slide a few things in here and there? Yes, I'm coming, but I'm doing this. Please ignore that. I mean, I'm trying to follow as much as I can, but I'm sorry about this. Just ignore that. Is that you this morning? Is that me? Or do we find ourselves amongst the rest of the guests that said, we're coming, you asked for it this way, this is the way we're coming. I trust that's where we find ourselves. The fifth main point of the message is the results of refusal. What happened to the first group, the pre-invited ones? Verse 7, the king heard, he was wroth, he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. This is not a situation where I come to a Y, this one leads around this side of the hill, this one leads around to this side of the hill, and I can choose which path I want based on the scenery I'm going to see. This is not that kind of a situation. It's clear here that we choose the right, we accept the invitation, or we face the destruction. The king sent his armies out to destroy the ones that rejected him. And that's our lot if we reject Christ. If we reject Christ, we are asking for destruction. My sons know that if they disobey a clear command, that they've already asked for punishment. They know that. And that's the way it is in life. If we disobey God's clear commands, we've already asked for the punishment. And as, I guess it's kind of a side dish, it's not really on my notes here, but I couldn't help but think about the thoughts of predestination or eternal security. Right here in this passage, neither one of those is prevalent. Those that were originally invited were judged because they would not accept. I believe they had been friends, children, because they had that invitation. But that did not guarantee them the friendship of the king when they chose to disobey. Number two on results of refusal, taken from verses 7, 13 and 14. 13 and 14 being the results of the one that came in toward the one that came in without his wedding garment. He was cast into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I just summed these all up very simply. The king was not afraid to judge, for judgment was due. The king extended mercy. We see that here when he went out and invited both the bad and good. But when the response was rejection, rejection, then judgment came. Okay, the third subpoint. To get this one, I have to read one more verse. It doesn't really, it's a follow-up to the passage, but it's not part of the passage itself. Then went the Pharisees, verse 15, and took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. Okay, we have the story. We have what happened to the people in the story. But there was people here listening to the story that understood that they were guests being invited to this wedding, and that they were refusing it. The result was guilt. They were smitten in the heart. And that's why they went around to destroy Jesus. The results of refusal, guilt, condemnation, lack of peace. This is what happens when we reject the call of Christ. Okay, for the last major point of the lesson, we're going to turn to Matthew 25. We're going to look at the first 13 verses here. Matthew 25, verse 1. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch ye therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. And here we are seeing the story of people that were preparing for the bridegroom to come. In the Jewish custom, as I understand it, the announcement was made that there is going to be a marriage here. And then the bridegroom went back to his hometown for a while to prepare to bring his bride back. And then he came, and he expected that the bride and her guests would be ready to come to the marriage. And that's where we are in this passage right here. The bridegroom was home. He was preparing. And now he's one day going to come back. Actually, in this passage, he came back. Some were prepared. Some were not. He came back at night. So it was actually imperative that the attendees had lamps with oil in them because they were responsible to light the way as they went back, as the procession went back during the night, since he came in the night. The bridegroom was prepared. The question is, and this is my point number 6, main point 6, are we prepared? I actually summed it a lesson on being prepared, but the emphasis is, are we prepared? And as we look at these verses, some took it serious, the need for preparation, some took it serious, some did not. And just moving right on, second sub-point, some were prepared, some were not. Very closely related. Again, there were some that said, he'll come, but there's a 50-50 chance he'll get here in the morning. And this will be enough oil, because it'll be daytime. There were others that said he's coming back whenever. Let's do whatever it takes to be ready. And so they, and I'm getting into sub-point number 3, the activities of the unprepared can resemble that of the prepared. They were both sleeping, slumbering. They both had lamps. Whenever they laid down to sleep, they both had lamps burning by their bedside, ready to go. But the difference wasn't quite so noticeable. Five of them had a flask of oil beside. Five of them did not, or if they did, it was empty. Preparation can be in the form of little things. We talked earlier about both bad and good. We can't mix the bad and the good. If we're reserving bad, then it's bad. I think I've used this analogy before, but if you bite into an apple, and the half that you have has a worm in it, the half you have in your hand, do you consider that to be a good apple? No. The worm was probably just in a little bit. But we do not consider that to be a good apple. That's bad. That little worm destroyed the whole thing. And that is the way it is in life. As soon as we reserve a little worm, it's destroyed. We've just wasted it. We've squandered it. The fourth subpoint under being prepared is we need to be prepared at all times. Some people have taken the standpoint that my life is ahead of me, I can change later. But as we learn from this account here of the bridegroom coming back to the 10 virgins, you need to be prepared at any time. I believe that Christ is coming again. And I believe it could be before the week is out, before the day is out, or even before the service is out. As we look at the world around us, we have both bad and good. And that's what is described for the end times when Christ comes back. My fifth subpoint here, found in verse 12 of Matthew 25, we have the five foolish virgins. They realized the need for preparation, and they quick tried to make that preparation. And they tried to catch up to the procession. But they got there, the marriage was in session, the door was shut. They said, "Lord, open to us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not." The results of unpreparedness are destructive and permanent. There's not a quick fix for it. There's not just something we can do to fix it up. There's the need to be prepared at all times. Today, we are being called to a marriage celebration with Christ the bridegroom in the house of God. The hosts are there. The invitation has been put out. The preparations are made. It's ready. But it's up to you and I. Are we going to accept this? Are we going to refuse this? And that is going to make all the difference in your life. I think we're going to bow our words for a head of prayer, and then bow our heads for a word of prayer, and then we're going to ask for an invitation hymn. Let's bow our heads.